This is a podcast from meow.net.
Meow!
Testing.
I'm liking my phone.
Right, none of that.
Hello, speak at normal volume.
Meow at IKF.
Hello, and welcome to another special ICAF episode. Today, I'm joined by Hui Lin Ko and Han Shui Mei, co-artistic directors of Drama Box in Singapore. Drama Box is a socially engaged theatre company that creates works for dialogue, reflection, and change. And I met Han and Hui Lin at ICAF in Rotterdam at a panel discussion they'd organised and they were chairing with Theatre of the Oppressed practitioners from Thailand, Taiwan, and Singapore. So today we're going to find out a bit more about the work of Drama Box, about the ICAF hub that they organised, and some of the points that were raised during the discussion on the practices of Theatre of the Oppressed, and hopefully to find out a bit more as well about what they're currently working on. So welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for having us, really.
Pleasure. Yeah. So nice to have the opportunity. So maybe to begin with, you could give us a bit of a background about where you are today, the building you're in, and a bit about your role at Drama Box and what Drama Box does. Lots of questions there in one.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Shui Mei. You can also call me Han. Perhaps it's easier that we just go with Han for the rest of the podcast. So we are now in Singapore in a four-story shop house in Chinatown. So if you come to Singapore, it's also known as Kreta Ayer. Ayer. Yes. And we are in this four-story shop house. It's a conserved building. And we are now feeling very hot. Because actually in this part of Asia, I don't know if you have seen the news, we are undergoing this phase of heat wave. So right now it's kind of like maybe like 30 over degrees Celsius here in Singapore. We are great to be here. Thanks for having us. And maybe as an introduction, so Drama Box has been in this building, I think since 2000s, early 2000s. Yeah, and we are a socially engaged theatre company in Singapore. We started off as a Mandarin language, Chinese language theatre company, making works about social issues. And eventually over the years, we evolved our art-making processes to bring it outside of the rehearsal space, outside of theatre venues, and we started doing site-specific works, going to different parts of Singapore, and working with different communities, ranging from like migrant workers, residents in specific neighborhoods, on various issues, ranging from end of life issues to, you know, issues surrounding land use, land contestation. Especially because in Singapore, space is a highly contested issue. It's a highly contested thing, actually. So space is limited, and we are always, you know, facing an issue whereby things are constantly being developed, you know, buildings are torn, history, heritage is constantly being, you know, renegotiated and eroded. So I think that was an issue that we spent quite a lot of years looking at with different communities. And our work over the years has become increasingly multidisciplinary as well. So instead of just doing theatre, we are also working with different artists from different disciplines, visual artists, sound artists. We also go beyond the art sector. We work with collaborators like, you know, people from the Heritage Society, Nature Society, also people who are involved in architecture and conservation in some of our projects. So yeah, over the years, we have seen how our practice has grown into longer term processes, you know, having to collaborate and talk to people from different sectors and disciplines. Yeah.
And can you give us a sense of the scale of the organisation? How many people work there? What are your roles and how is it funded?
So, hi everyone, my name is Hui Ling. So, I'm the other co-artistic director of Drama Box. So, to answer Sophie, currently we are an 8-person outfit, well, 8.5 if you count, keep in mind our part-time accountant who works with us. So, and out of the 8 full-time staff that we have, there are 3 artists. So, namely myself, Xue Mei. So, both of us are theatre directors as well. And then we also have our founding artistic director, our founder, who now has stepped down. So the two of us are doing the co-artistic directorship work. So 3 of us are the artists who are creating different projects and works here in Drama Box. And then we have 5 other team members who are, 2 of them are producers, 1 in marketing, and 2 of them in operations, admin, and all the very difficult work regarding state funding and reporting. Yeah, so very important, but very difficult work in that. Yeah, so that's us and that part-time account staff that we have.
So shall we say a little bit, if you could say a little bit about, tell us about your role in ICAF. Was this the first year you'd been involved and the hub that you were invited to kind of organise?
Yeah, so actually our first interaction with ICAF was back in 2011. So I was a master's student, then just graduated with Kerry Schaefer, who actually runs some of the morning sessions during ICAF. And she introduced me actually to the whole world of ICAF. And so I first started as a participant, and together with Xue Mei, then we attended the subsequent one again, really being excited to see what there are there. And then we were invited in 2017 actually to bring one of our very exciting projects called The Goalie, which is an inflatable moving theatre, actually engineered in the UK. And then we brought it to Singapore as a space in terms of, because that was the period of time where it was the whole Occupy movement. Yeah, so we wanted to reclaim some of the public spaces here we have in Singapore because it's dwindling. So we created this inflatable space and we brought a participatory performance about land contestation that Hans spoke about just now, called The Lesson. So we brought that performance together with the rest of our team, actually to ICAF in 2017. So that was a big group of us there. And then in 2020, we were supposed to be part of the next ICAF. And then, of course, COVID happened. And I think during that process, then Eugene, Yasmina, as well as Anna Maria, then contacted me to ask if, you know, we will be interested to do a mini ICAF test pilot version of a hub, digital, online, during that period of time, because, you know, it was the pandemic and everybody was staying at home, but we still wanted to connect very, very much. So that was when we got some financial support from actually ICAF to invite quite a lot of collaborators across the Southeast Asian or the Asian region, where we get each other to meet actually over Zoom and doing a lot of exchanges, reconnecting, you know, checking with each other how we are, especially because our work is so much embedded in connection physically. And then, you know, with that social distancing that we all have to get, you know, to be locked down, etc., how are we all doing and how are our participants and our community, how are we all doing, you know? So we had that entire connecting digitally platform during the 2021 mini ICAF hub that we were doing digitally. And then after that, we thought, hey, it would be a great idea to continue again. So that's why we wanted to have the 2023, during the 2023 ICAF, to have a Singapore hub, which was supposed to be digital entirely. And then halfway through the preparation for the Rotterdam ICAF, because the world started to open up and traveling was made possible again. So they really wanted to reconnect physically again. And hence, we morphed our programming into a hybrid version where there are three digital online panel sessions starting from 2023 January, February, and then March, leading up to two sessions where both of us then flew and hence met Sophie in person in Rotterdam itself. But then some of the panelists as well as the participants were actually based in their own city and we connected digitally. Yeah, so there was a hybrid version that we were trying to figure out, you know, how could we still connect and, you know, if part of us were there, how was it like? Yeah, but I think the idea of bringing visibility to the Asian artists who are doing a lot of great work in this area and this region, how can we allow us to find and have a platform to connect, have conversations, and also witness each other's works, as well as, you know, having that process where somebody probably reflects some of their thinking or, you know, feedback or critiquing, you know, the processes and what you're doing, you know, and then we move off again to do our own creations and we come back and meet again. So I think in a nutshell, the spirit of what the Mini ICAF Singapore Hub wants to do is very, very similar to what the ICAF in Rotterdam is doing in terms of, you know, opening up a vessel and a vacuum where we come together, reconnect with each other with similar ideals about the kind of community-based practices that we want to do, be across disciplines, and having that kind of exchanges, having that kind of dialogues with each other, and allowing actually each other to learn from each other. So I think that's the spirit of what it is, and I guess in the next rendition, it will continue to be. Yeah, so that's something we are already thinking about. You know, what do we do next, and how can we now that physical travel is available, you know, like what does that bring to us? What does it mean to travel? So those are some of the questions that we are thinking about moving on from now. Mm.
Thank you. And the panel that I went to in ICAF was focusing on the Theatre of the Oppressed processes and practices of practitioners in Taiwan, Thailand, and Singapore, wasn't it?
Singapore.
And it was, I think, also obviously because it was there were people in the audience who weren't from Asia, so I think also quite interesting for us to hear about why Theatre of the Oppressed and other kind of related tactics and approaches to dealing with issues that are perhaps otherwise hard to kind of deal with and confront publicly. Was such a it was a kind of an important method of way of working, but also I think a real insight into the kind of political and I guess sort of, you know, the political context that you're all working in, and obviously they're all very, very different, but they when you're sitting from a position in, you know, in Holland or in the UK, and we obviously complain, we love to complain a lot about what we can and can't do and funding and all the rest of it. When you're hearing practitioners talk about other, like, quite serious barriers to practice, you know, to kind of having a voice and freedom of speech and what you can and can't do in public space, it reminds you of the privilege of obviously that you have that one has in certain contexts. So I wondered if you know that for you. You know, having you're all talking to each other, you know, the people on the panel, I understand, you know, that you know each other, you're part of this hub, you've been having conversations for a long time, you perhaps know much more about each other's contexts. And I think for me, that was really important to bring to an audience who are really invested in these practices as well and these methods, but don't necessarily always get to hear about the difficulties of and the dangers as well sometimes of carrying out this work. I don't know. Yeah, that's just my reflections on having been there and also having spoken to other practitioners in Singapore, for example, about these issues and the de facto ban on forum theatre, for example, that happened. So, I don't know if you want to say anything more about that, your reflections on that panel in particular about TO approaches.
Yeah, so Han was the moderator. So
yeah,
perhaps
very good moderator.
Give us, yeah.
I guess my biggest, so in this panel discussion, we invited Shu Ya Lai from Taiwan and also San Yi from Thailand to talk about their practices in their respective countries. Of course, there was also Heng Luan from Singapore representing Drama Box and how our work in foreign theatre and Theatre of Your Press has evolved also throughout the years. I think there were a few things that really struck me as I was listening to their sharing together with the audience, you know, during the session. I guess firstly, really, this big question that Shu Ya brought to the room and space for us to collectively, you know, perhaps wonder with her, which is this question of how Theatre of the Oppressed can or should address issues of geopolitical nature. Of course, with Taiwan, we know about their existing situation. We know about the conflicting tensions that's, you know, been going on and increasingly so. And you know, her sharing about how what it feels like on the ground for them, how society is generally very polarized, and everything gets politicized, you know. How do you have spaces for dialogue, for this kind of deep exploration of, you know, issues becomes a huge challenge. And for me, I was very struck by that challenge that they face. Because in a way, if I reflect on it, while it may seem that, you know, it's something that is very specific to Taiwan's context, but I also feel like it's something that it's very global, in the sense that, you know, we may not have an impending, or we may not have the anxiety of, you know, having an impending war, or, you know, fearing that war will break out. But I think we can see how, you know, the space for open dialogue is, in a way, has increasingly shrunk over the years. In a few ways, right? Like how, whether it's through direct censorship or whether it is through, you know, peer censorship, self-censorship. I think that space for dialogue has somehow shrunk over the years, even as the internet has made it so much easier to communicate. So I feel like this question of, you know, how do we then still preserve that space where we can address this kind of issues that crosses boundaries, national boundaries, in an open way. I think that is a question that we all share. I think the other thing that struck me was what Heng Luan mentioned. And I feel like, you know, from the audience's questions and their responses thereafter, perhaps also resonated with them, right? This idea of how Theatre of the Oppressed is not just a performance form. In fact, it is actually maybe, you know, how we think about it right now is this sense of community building. How do we take away that sense of building solidarity from Boal's work, right, into our practices today? So I also feel like, you know, even though some of us may not be doing forum theatre, you know, or plays, but I think we all share, you know, that sense of how we borrow from Theatre of the Oppressed to understand the world and at the same time also build solidarity and build community to address, you know, some of the very pressing issues that we face. Yeah, so I guess these are some of these big questions and thoughts that I left with from the session.
Yeah, definitely. That's so helpful, Han. And I think the issues around, you know, I think some of the topics were around the threat of rising right-wing populism, and something that I've found as well in the practices I'm involved in and thinking about and talking to people about is how, you know, a really like simple and fundamental question is like, how do you have conversations with people you don't understand or you don't get along with or that you potentially hate or at least not the people, but the ideas that you don't, you know, you can't align with. because I think it's obviously algorithmically so much easier for us to hear the voices that we want to hear and to work with the politics that we kind of we feel more comfortable with. So I think these methods potentially of that would be being talked about around forum theatre of the oppressed, invisible theatre, and things were attempts at trying to open up that space for conflict and difference of opinion and hear each other. And I think that's something I got from a lot of ICAF, is like, how do we learn to hear each other better? And what does that practice? And because it was obviously the theme as well for the conference was the festival was around sound, wasn't it? So I think that, you know, the practices of listening, which, you know, have been theorized and practiced for decades, feel so important. And it's not like we've cracked it and we know what to do, but there are people trying to do things, to experiment with these spaces. I mean, maybe that leads us into a question around what you're up to now, like your current work. What are you focusing on? You got back from Rotterdam, you've obviously got loads of projects on the go, juggling lots of things. Do you want to tell us a bit about your current projects?
So for me, I guess what's really exciting so far is that I'm working on this project. Actually, it was something that Han and I worked on back in 2016. Yeah, 16. And this was actually the last standing public housing in Singapore from the British times. So then it was stipulated, because it was on prime land in a pretty central to town, I think slightly off the, you know, center of Singapore. I mean, Singapore is really small, so, you know, 10 minutes away is a big thing. And so the government actually wanted to demolish the space, which was at that point in time occupied or rented out actually to the rented community. So the people who are of a lower income, and many of them are single and seniors. So and they have probably been staying there for a very, very long time. So and then there was this public announcement where they were told to move. So even actually there was a book that was published called They Were Told to Move, I think. Yeah. So where the residents actually found out about the move from the newspaper rather than being told that they were to move, because they're the rented community, right? So they say, okay, yeah, you know, this is what's going to happen, and you're very lucky that you all can move together, because usually apparently what we heard was that the rented community usually are just dispersed to wherever there is space. So so then we did a project back then with the residence community performing, and then inviting 100 audiences every night to come there to listen to the residents' stories, visiting spaces that they were residing, they were, you know, sitting there, you know, places that were precious to them, like places where they probably sit and enjoy the wind, you know, like their house, how they actually dolled it up so nicely and beautifully. Yeah, so from that project, we ended off, I mean, it actually was quite exciting, because we were then part of the, like what Han mentioned earlier, part of this heritage society and our friends who are in the civil society. And at that point in time, we also had a few friends. So like, for example, Heng, our founding artistic director, was in the parliament at that point in time as a nominated member of parliament. So then we were able to work together with the civil society group to put together the findings and the reflections from the audiences night after night, as well as the stories and the wishes of the residents, together with the architecture plan. And then we submitted it, actually tabled in the parliament. And it was a big win, because I think it was one of the first time where actually it caused a little pause, you know, in what was going to happen in this new development. So actually there were about 20 buildings, if I'm not wrong. And then actually 6 are now conserved. So when you come to Singapore now, actually you still see the 6. Yeah, so I think the project that I'm working on now actually is the thereafter of what happened from there, where we were invited back to this community after they have moved into their new single apartment block, but 18 stories high. So from 20 blocks, 60% filled, they are now living in one same apartment block, and then all living in much more cramped spaces. And apparently after six, seven years after the move, the social aid in terms of help, like financial or daily survival, food to eat, these are very, very well taken care of. But the community fabric itself in terms of the relationship, actually it seems to be a cause for concern. Yeah, so I think people, so there were two funders, one of them being Singapore Art Museum, who wanted us to go and see if we could use theatre and our engagement methods to re-engage with the community to see if we can bring about a betterment towards their livelihoods and their everyday living through the arts. So that's this exciting project that I'm working on, where we reconnected with the residents who have moved to this new space. Every week, we kind of go back there to do different kind of engagement exercises where we design. This is where we work with another group of friends who actually does a lot of social architecture, where, you know, it really looks at placemaking and the idea of humans in spaces. Yeah, so then we were doing community mapping as well to see and understand the habits and the behaviors of the communities. So so that's actually in progress. And what's exciting, I guess, for me is that it's a two-year process. So in this two-year process, we are now at the almost to the end of year one. We go there weekly, and then we do different kind of engagement exercises with the residents to map and see and understand where they are, what they are doing, how they're feeling now, and what actually are the gaps that need to be filled, and actually what the community really desires, I guess, at the end of the day. You know, if we do one thing that they should be a better community, but what does that better mean? Yeah, so it was actually a very different experiment or work for me, because usually we come up with performances where we invite the public to come and watch, whereas I think this time around is really focused on the community itself with no pressure to create an output at the end of the day. Yeah, so we could really go deep and spend time to design the engagement processes to see and to actually take time to, you know, echoing you, Sophie, to hear what is really on the ground and what really they want to do and say, and then we develop it from there. Yeah, so that's something that I'll be working on till actually next year. So I'm looking forward to the ending now to see what's going to happen.
Brilliant. Thank you. Han, do you want to tell us what you're up to?
For me, with Drama Box, I am very interested in continuing to develop our programs for youths. Specifically this year, we are trying to pilot a youth camp, working with, instructors or practitioners from different fields, namely theatre, movement, as well as sound, to come together to create this environment of a camp where youths can come together, connect physically, interact, and express themselves through whatever they have so-called learned over the days from these different instructors from different fields. Essentially, I guess, to put it simply, I think the camp is really to bring youths together from different backgrounds, have them creatively express themselves and what they feel and see about the world they live in. So for us, I think it's not a new kind of project. There are many, many different kinds of youth drama camps all over the world. But at the same time, I think we recognize how in Singapore, at least, some of the programs for young people in this area has become increasingly more like enrichment classes. And we are trying to kind of see whether we can bring back some of that spirit that young people can enjoy in a camp setting, especially in a post, okay, I won't say post, but especially, coming out of COVID, coming out of a period of about 1 to 2 years where young people were not really attending school, or, their experiences in schools, in this kind of large group settings were drastically altered because of COVID. You know, some people don't even know what their classmates look like after 1 year, right? So I think coming out from that kind of an environment, we are trying to pilot a youth camp to explore, you know, what other environments can we take the youth into? How else can they experience the world around us? How else can they get to know people besides screens and besides, you know, being masked up and stuff? So I think that's one important project that we are doing.
And what age, when you say youth, what age range are you talking about?
We are looking at people from 13 to 18-ish, this age group generally for all our programs with young people. Specifically because I think the sensing is that there are quite a lot of good programs for the younger children, a lot of good theatre drama programs for younger children, but maybe significantly fewer for people who are slightly older. So once they go into what we call secondary schools, which is like the 13 to 16, 17-year-old range, we sort of lose them. So I think we are specifically interested in looking at this age group. Maybe also because this age group is harder, or rather I would say different age groups have their own specific challenges, but this age group, a unique challenge for this age group is really how to get them to buy into whatever program you're trying to do. Because this is the act cool age, right? So yeah, I think the challenge of how to engage them, how to get them involved and interested. Yeah, I think that's something that's exciting to work towards. Yeah.
Or getting them off TikTok.
Yes. Yeah. What can we do that is more interesting than TikTok? Okay.
You mentioned you're trying to do something different than enrichment classes. What is that? I don't know what an enrichment class is.
Oh.
I've managed to somehow avoid that. What is that?
Right. I didn't know that it was uniquely Singaporean. Okay, I don't know if it's uniquely Asian. Singaporean. But okay, the idea, so over here, enrichment classes, right, the idea of it simply means classes that mostly students take outside of school that I guess it may not necessarily be academic related. Because when it's related to their studies, then we call it tuition. Yeah. But, you know, extra co-curricular activities or you know, yeah, activities that are not related to academics, you know, yeah, any kind of like arts, sports related activities that go above and beyond what they can do in school, what they learn in school. So I guess this would be like supplementary classes in a way.
So it's something like, for example, a lot of the kids nowadays, like when I was a kid, you know, to be able to learn piano classes is a big thing, you know, but nowadays it's very common. Yeah, and everybody goes for ballet classes, piano classes. So from Monday to Sunday, sometimes the children's schedule is very, very packed because they have different classes to attend, like archery classes, you know, football camps to go to. Yeah, so there is this huge industry of what we call enrichment classes here. And I believe in Taiwan, Hong Kong, Korea, they also have such a trend of these other classes additionally to learn skills and, you know, develop your talents. Yeah.
Okay, that's clear. And I guess, we, you know, there's perhaps not time to go into it now, but is there a class dimension to that?
It is. I mean, the middle, what's it called? Middle income group in Singapore is actually very huge and getting larger and larger. So there are quite a lot of what we call here double income families where both the parents are working and earning a very good income. And the number of kids that, well, as with many affluent cities in the world, the birth rate is declining. So the amount of money they have to support each child actually perhaps will increase. But of course, I mean, there is the other end of the spectrum, as we know, that there will always be, you know, that group of children or families who actually are not as well off. I think in this past year, actually, the inflation, I'm sure it hit everywhere else in the world as well. I mean, we're also connected nowadays. So the inflation situation is really bad here as well. And I was having a conversation with Han the other day that you know, we go to the, there are a lot of shopping malls here in Singapore. And when we are walking around and people were still eating in restaurants, you know, like having, you know, because like a 4 or 5 person is about, I guess about, it can be about 50 to 80 pounds per night. So, you know, people are still enjoying that kind of meals outdoors. So I was wondering, because we keep hearing a recession coming and the scary inflation that has been hitting Singapore, but everybody still seems to be enjoying. Then I spoke to a friend who works in finance, and she was saying that actually the most badly hit, as usual, will be the people from the lower income group. Yeah, so I think those kids then will definitely be the ones who will suffer most in terms of the lack of exposure. I think the other program that we had on the Singapore Hub, which is what we call the TTKC, the Tatakut Kids Club, which actually means the Children Don't Be Afraid Club. Yeah, and then so that is actually a space curated. And then embedded themselves in that rental community or the more low-income space where the residential kids who live upstairs or residents, like I wouldn't say residential, the kids who are living upstairs or, you know, in the neighboring blocks, they can come together in the center and actually be exposed to work with artists, you know, be it in dancing, in singing, or in theater, doing drama, and things like that. I think, you know, so which is why that space itself becomes very precious, where actually the artists or people who work in community spaces then embed ourselves in that area to provide these kinds of engagements and exposure, I guess, to the children, that there is actually other things that you can do. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I think that's also why I wanted to and program the TTKC into it, because I think the space that they occupy in Singapore is so important. I think if I'm not wrong, it's like really one of the only spaces like that in Singapore. Yeah. So, I mean, there has been a lot of interest in multiplying that in many other places in Singapore. We'll see how it goes. I think the founder is our friend. Yeah, so we will see how it goes, and yeah, definitely be exciting to see how these children can be more supported. Yeah,
I think moving forward for us, we are also kind of looking into a few up and coming projects that look at really being sited in specific places for a long period of time. So, for instance, Heng is the other artist in our company. He's now looking into developing a project that he and Hui Ling did on this island called Pulau Ubin. And so, you know, working towards at least, you know, for a start, a 3-year kind of process and project that will be on the island itself. For me, you know, in the longer term, I'm also looking at how we can actually site ourselves in maybe one school as a pilot, as a start, to look at how we can use the arts to transform some of the learning experiences in a school. And maybe perhaps expand the vocabulary of how arts can be used in schools beyond its current ways of, you know, like performing plays at assemblies and doing workshops. So what else can we do using the arts in schools that can transform the learning experience? Yeah, so I think in the longer term, you know, these are things that we are trying to develop that require us to probably stay in this particular space for like a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It would be great to check in again with the projects you're doing further down the line as well. But yeah, thank you for your contributions. We'll end it there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that you've heard the podcast, you can go to the website to find out more details, including references and links. The website's at miaw.net. That's miaaw.net. See you there.